Hi, I'm Sunny Dean.
And I'm Scott Drakeford.
And this is the Publishing Rodeo Podcast. In 2022, we both launched debut novels in the same genre with the same publisher in the same year. But despite having very similar starts, our books and subsequently each of our careers went in very different directions.
That pattern repeats itself throughout the industry over and over. Why do some books succeed while others seem to be dead on arrival?
In this podcast, we aim to answer those questions and many more, along with how to build and maintain an author career.
Everyone signing a contract deserves to know what they're really signing up for. In an industry that loves its secrets, we'll be sharing real details from real people. We'll cover the gamut of life as a Big Five published author, from agents to publishing contracts, finances, and more.
I actually start it whenever we start, don't
you? Okay.
And then Scott always complains that I stealth, even though there's like a giant number on the screen. It's not stealth.
No, she takes pictures. She'll take, how she posts snapshots, screenshots every now and then? She doesn't tell you when she's taking that. She just takes it. She just does it. And then
it's just like, ignore the countdown. That doesn't mean anything. That little red light, that's just for show.
Yeah, exactly.
We're wise.
Oh, don't worry. I'll edit this out. Okay, sure you will.
So this is why I had to make a list beforehand, although it was only a mental list, of things I must remember not to say.
Yes. Then you told me, we were chatting just before this, and she told me that you had mentioned that there were a few things you wanted to stay away from. And I asked her to relay the message that this is not a safe space. So, yeah.
Yeah, you say it, you own it. I get it.
honest to God, I haven't listened to probably 80% of the episodes, so I have no idea what's made it on.
All been good. Yeah, no, it's compelling listening.
Well, yeah, compelling listening and good to, not me is one thing, and good to me might be another, but I will just never know. So we'll see.
I'm more cautious than you. I think like the launch day damage one, I edited about 6 times before it went out because I was just,
Joking aside, I have listened to that one. But anyone where I'm like, oh, fuck, what did I, I have a sixth sense about having said something dumb, I've listened to. But joking aside, that's really a testament of my trust in Sunny. Like, I just don't.
Foolishly placed.
Yeah.
Yeah, foolishly placed, maybe. But so far, it has not steered me wrong.
Yeah, or at least no one's told you about it because you haven't listened to the episodes. So
that is correct. Yeah, maybe that's why my book doesn't sell. I don't know.
It's just, if one thing, we should get to the bottom of that.
Very belatedly, I guess, like 2 minutes in. Welcome to the Publishing Rodeo, guys. This is our first episode after we get to publicly say we actually made it to the Hugo shortlist because of you folks. So thank you for that. We are going to the losers party. Make sure to vote in someone competent so that we can lose. We have with us, laughing in the background, David Ragg.
Hello.
Who is a fellow Harper author. He's sort of famously known for being ludicrously tall.
I can see your head next to the ceiling.
Yeah, sorry. I am also standing up tonight to try and, keep it fresh.
Yeah, I just thought you were in a hobbit house or something.
All my houses are hobbit houses.
On that note, can you introduce yourself, David? Right. And then we'll lead in from like your journey.
Hi, I am Dave Ragg. I'm the author of the Articles of Faith series, which was The Black Hawks and The Writers, the first of which came out in 2019. And I am the author of the new Tales of the Plains trilogy, first of which The Hunters came out in hardback July last year. That's 2023 for those playing along at home. And the next part of which will be out in hardback in August, which is at time of recording 4 months away. And you think we'd have announced the title and the cover by now, but you'd be wrong.
Yeah, David, I seem to remember, because I've just been reading your most recent two books, and they were, to use Premi Muhammad's term, secret books. They kind of came out, and I'm not sure they really got anywhere near the, well, no, not sure. They didn't get anywhere near the publicity they deserved, which to me seemed like an absolutely brutal shame.
It's very kind of you to say so. I appreciate that.
And if you're the kind of person who really enjoyed Black Tongue Thief and Christopher Buhlmann, you'll probably really like David Ragg's books, which is, well, I'm going to throw that out there. But
I did hear that. Yeah.
Yeah. You like those books. You get those books. Yeah.
I think he didn't.
Confession time. Yeah.
Me and Richard did.
So, well, for one
thing. You can't respect everyone who comes on the podcast. It's okay.
Yeah, I am chronically behind on a lot of the reading I want to do just because I had a sort of surprise child about a year ago.
And we've all done it, some of us twice. Yeah.
Well, so anyway.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. It's been wonderful in most respects, but not
the
all
mouth
of them.
Says yes, the eyes say something else.
Honestly, it's so amazing, but it is certainly a different path than I thought my life would take in the short term, at least. No, I haven't read Christopher Buhlmann's books yet. I intend to. I have not read your books yet. I intend to.
Most people haven't.
To be, well, Dave, I understand exactly how that feels. So I am sorry for that, but I do plan to remedy it. I have stacks of books upstairs, so I'm in my basement. I have stacks of books upstairs in my main living area that are my to-be-read piles that just kind of float around the house. And yours is on top of one of them. I might even pick it up soon. We'll see. Is the Blackhawks.
If only just to move it to another part. No, that's fine. The Blackhawks, if we were going to get ourselves back on track, that is probably it's the best introduction to my work, if you like, because it's the thing that I set out to write, and it's far from perfect. Well aware of that. The books I've written since have been much better books, but that is the one that contained the kind of, I'm going to write fantasy, and lol, it's not going to be very serious fantasy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and the closest thing that I have read and really loved that sounds similar is the work of Nick Eames. I don't know if you've read that. But
so they pitched me. I mean, the original Blackhawks cover was like when Harry saw it, he went, they've gone for Kings of the Wild.
Yeah,
I'd never heard of Kings of the Wild at that point and looked it up. Was like, oh, that's the same artist and the same cover designer. And yeah, it's just pretty much a cover version. But that's fine. They pitched me as like the triangulation of Abercrombie, Lynch, and Eames, and I sat in the middle like a sort of a festering embarrassment.
I really like two of those three, and I'm not going to tell you which is the other.
Oh, that's it. You play hard to get. He can't hear us, Scott. It's fine.
I do not like to speak ill of other writers because,
they know where you live. Yeah, I know.
They know where I live. I felt the other side of that too. Where I was leading into is it's really interesting that I hadn't heard of you and your books because you're working with a major publisher, presumably in the US too. I don't actually even know.
Yeah, published by Harper 360. So they will sell stuff via Harper UK in North America. But unlike people who don't get a US deal, you can get my ebooks. You can even get paperbacks and things ordered into bookshops in the States and Canada.
Yeah. Yeah.
And audiobooks likewise.
Yeah, I ordered your physical book and it came right to me, unlike a lot of books that are UK only. So that's something. But it's interesting because your book is one that when I saw it, I was like, what the fuck? How did I, each of these things would have probably gotten me to buy the book by themselves. Altogether, I would have been intrigued, let alone because of the blurb and synopsis that was interesting. So, yeah, you do seem to be in the secret author club. So, welcome. We should probably make it a formal club. But yeah, anyway.
I've never heard of David. Until I met him in person.
Yeah. And I've even then, she still wasn't sure.
Yeah, even then I was like, wow, you're an author. I didn't know Harper had a mid-list. I thought they just had like all top tier authors.
So there's a special room at the back for the mid-listers. And the thing is, they don't tell you when you're in that room about the other room. you think that's the room because you just, you see people walking through it. You're like, hey, look, there's Rebecca Kwong, there's Sarah. Yeah. Hi, guys. Hi. Hi. Where are they going? Huh? Oh, okay. Well, we'll just wait here in the author room. Yeah, no, that's cool. Where are they going? No, it's fine.
Sun Yi, she only noticed you because she could see you from her, her balcony, right? And you stuck up above all the other mid-listers.
It's like, how are you so massive and yet so invisible? It makes no sense at all.
Who's that tall one? Make him dance.
What is that?
I'm definitely not in the cool set for Harper, I think. When all the thing is, all the people who live up north, I think if your publisher's in London, they do tend to forget you exist a little bit, and you have to sort of periodically remind them twice a year by showing up to events.
Frying the life out of them.
Yeah. Like, oh God, you haven't died yet up there in the cold.
We just thought they'd go home.
Yep.
Yeah.
North of the wall.
Do you want to...
I think it might be worth, I suppose, for a bit of background, I'll try and summarize like how I came to be published, because I am a middle-aged white guy with, you know, pretty much no redeeming features. So, like, one of society's
other than your height.
Chosen. Yeah. No, redeeming. There's nothing redeeming about this height. Or, you know, chronic joint pain. I like to think of myself, I don't know, sort of the closest comparison, I guess, is like the Richard Swan parallel, except if I rolled twos on all my skill checks. I decided I was going to have a go at writing a book like years and years ago. I had my sort of my pre-midlife crisis in my early 30s, left my job, didn't want to get another one. My wife said, stop moaning, you know, why don't you write that book you're always banging on about? So I said, yes, I will write that book. And then I took like 9 months to produce this sort of 240,000 word, what I thought would be maybe YA. Yeah, I did not have any idea what I was doing. And then one of us got pregnant. It's not fair to name names. So I had to go back to work and I continued tinkering in the background. And I was like, you know what? I think I've learned enough after sort of 3 years of kicking the shit out of this wretched manuscript. Like, I think I'm now ready to write the book I want to do, which was the book that turned into The Black Hawks. I was most of the way through that when the Grenfell fire happened in 2017. And in the aftermath of that, they did a charity auction. I say they, a lot of very well-meaning people did the Authors for Grenfell charity auction. And
hang on, Scott won't know what this event is. Right. So there was a series of like government housing council blocks in London.
I saw that on the news. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Buildings or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, and they massively caught fire. And anyway.
Yeah, it was pretty horrendous, and a lot of people banded together afterwards to put lots up. I bid on a few, and one of them was a review of your manuscript and sampled first three chapters and a synopsis from the author Francesca Haig, who is a magnificent writer and poet. She also writes as Francesca de Torres. Her new historical fantasy Salt Blood is coming out, I think, this month. So, you know, everyone should get that. Anyway, I won her lot. She reviewed the first three chapters. She said, you know what? This garbage isn't that bad. If you wanted to send it to some agents, I recommend these three. And I submitted to three agents, including some guy called Harry Illingworth, who apparently she sent a nudge to and said, "This guy, I reviewed this guy's first three chapters. He's not that awful." So Harry read my book within like a week of submission, came back to me within a couple of days saying, "Can I have the full manuscript?" And then came back to me 3 days later and said, "I'd like to represent you." So that was, I don't know, early 2018. No one else got a look in. And that was I'm represented immediately. Look at that. So easy. And then he was like, yeah, we don't need to do much to this. We'll just, you know, we'll send it straight out. Over the next couple of months, he came back. It's like, yeah, Harper Voyager, really interested. It's all looking good, all looking good. I'm like, wow, this is really going somewhere. I didn't think the book was that good. I mean, and then there were no other offers. Gradually, one by one, everyone else fell away. And what went from extreme excitement on the Voyager side became a, so, just us, is it? And then the offer came in. And the offer was two-book deal, which is what I wanted, because I didn't want to do a trilogy because everyone else is doing trilogies. I just wanted to do a two-book because I am just a contrarian twat like that. So they offered $5,000 advance per book. And fairly standard royalty rates. I do have them. I've got a spreadsheet somewhere on over there.
More organized than me.
Yeah, it does mean actually reading what's on it. I'm going to say 25% per ebook and audiobook, although that is, of course, 25% of the 70% they make or whatever it is that Audible lets them have. And then the paperback stuff is between 8 and 10%, I think. Not even that. It goes up 7.5. 7.5 for paperback, down to 4.5 heavily discounted.
In US money, that's about $6,300 per book.
Yeah. I think by the time we finish recording the podcast, it will be about $5,000. But yeah. Hey, arbitrage opportunity. So this was better than nothing, which was the alternative. But it was certainly not a runaway success. Harry basically went, well, it's this or nothing. I assume you want to take it. And I went, yeah. So that was that. And we got ARCs. The book was only delayed by 3 months between when it was originally planned and when it actually came out. Hang on. 4 months. And it did fine. It did okay. And then things gradually began to sort of slip from there. Again, COVID did not help. The second book got delayed by a year, even though it was already written by the time the first one was out. And yeah, then things just got sort of lost in the mire after that. So it might be worth like talking about this properly, perhaps slightly later on. But the notion of, you know, midlist, like you accept after a while, once it becomes clear to you that you are midlist, that you have no leverage, or as Scott might imagine, leverage. You have no power. Like the point at which, for my second series, we were trying to negotiate the contract and got offered exactly the same deal as I did as a debut, which was an absolute bargain basement offer. And, you know, Harry, as my agent, was going back to them and saying, whoa, 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 surely sales record did well. You know, not a bestseller, but did okay, paid itself back and then some. We can improve the royalty, we can improve the advance, all the rest of it. And they went, no. The terms of the new series, again, exactly the same, £5,000, so I'm going to say $6,300 per book. Same royalty rates, but this time with hardback. So the hardback rate, it is better. It is 10%, I think. Yeah, 10%, unless the discount is greater than 57%.
Do you have royalty escalators?
No. I mean, no, I say that. I do have royalty escalators, but they've never come up.
Okay.
In the nicest possible way. They're written into the contract, but mysteriously have not yet made it onto any royalty statements. They're all joint accounting as well, of course, which means the entire series must earn out before we get anywhere into royalties for any of the books, which leaves me in the wonderful position where, certainly in the first series, the first book had paid off more than they had given me in advances because we hadn't yet had the second set of milestone payments for the second books. So for a while, they actually owed me money.
I've just looked at Goodreads numbers, right? And I kind of have two questions, so I'm going to try to calm myself down and only ask one at a time. First question, did you know when you signed the contract and when you launched that you were midlist?
No, but that's, I think, because no one has ever told you are midlist. Like, midlist is a fallback status when the signifiers you would otherwise be looking for don't appear. And this will not be news to you, as it becomes apparent, it can take a very long time to, what's the phrase, give up hope. So you can be told to expect, you know, by other people, well-wishers, people with the best intentions. They can say things like, oh, you should get a marketing plan, or you'll find out details about your launch, or, you know, wait until you see the ARCs when they be cool. And you wait to hear and you wait to hear, and possibly maybe even if you've got balls the size of cantaloupes, you send an email going, hey, what about this thing? And publishing being publishing, you won't ever get a shut up, be quiet. Haven't you worked it out yet? What you'll get is a, we'll come back to you on that. We're all so excited because they are, and because they're all nice people, and because fundamentally there aren't enough of them. It's like the common lament is there are not enough people working on these books to give them all the treatment that they deserve, or, you know, you'd hope they all get. And the reality is that stuff is going to then fall through the cracks because, you know, I've never worked inside a publisher, but in my head, I just imagine a series of fires that one person is running backwards and forwards with like a kind of a teacup full of water, just going, oh, shit. And then when you send an email, you're just like a smoking bin in the corner that just burps up this little gout of green flame. And they're like, oh, God, that's still there. Quick, did anyone know? So you can be the politest stinking burning bin in the world, and that's certainly better than being an obnoxious git, but it's not going to magically create any more people to lavish attention on you. And I mean, in many ways, I went from being mid-list to being mid-mid-mid-list between my two series, because at least with the first one, I got the Richard Anderson cover. I got, you know, cover designed by Michaela Arcano. I got Ox. I got a launch party, which admittedly, yes, I did have to organize myself, but Voyager, yeah, Tash came along. It was a really wonderful evening. It was great fun. And sure, it was straight to paperback, but it just meant, you know, it sold straight through. We got a really good audio book done. I've never heard any complaints about the ebook. Like, it got as much of a shunt as a fairly down the road, like, no, you know, no hardback, no special edition, but we got Goldsborough on, obviously, because of, you know, the Goldsborough connection, DHH. Shh.
For those who don't know, our agency owns Goldsborough books. So.
Don't tell anyone. They won't know we're special.
Oh, sorry.
But if you like, the fairest throw of the dice we could have got. And then none of that for the second book. Like, literally nothing, because it was the middle of COVID and even getting the book finished and published was a struggle. But at least I was thinking when the new series came out and they said they wanted to do it in hardback, I was thinking, well, this is cool. Sure. You know, we've got no increase in advance. We've got no increase in royalty rates. We've got pretty much no improvement to any terms whatsoever. However, they're going to do it in hardback. But there were no arcs and no real publicity beyond, you know, quite a lot of stuff that I organized myself. At least, you know, they sent me to Comic Con, which is nice. No one there knew who I was, but I didn't care.
They still don't.
But yeah.
I didn't mean that aimed at you. I mean that... Because sending somebody to a convention just to send them to a convention is,
yeah,
in my opinion, more to placate you than to actually, yeah, get, oh, no, your attention.
I,
you know?
I was very grateful for the experience, but yeah, there is something about, I think, going to a massive fan-based convention like Comic-Con, where you do a little panel and then there's a, yeah, signing afterwards, especially, yeah, if you're quite late in the day and you've seen some other panels and you've seen the signing lines after those panels. And then you do your little 5 p.m. special and you can see the number of people in the seats is dwindling and dwindling. And, yeah, then they say there'll be a signing afterwards and you've never seen an exhibition center empty so fast.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a massive ego boost, Scott. Thoroughly recommended.
Oh yeah, I mean, unless they're doing something like a book giveaway for you, you know, your book, and making an event of that, I just don't see how that's helpful for authors who otherwise have very little visibility.
I mean, the fact that I didn't get a six-figure deal, I think, made it fairly clear I was not mid-list. But I did get ARCs, I did get a launch party. We got some. I got a blog tour of, you know, 7 or 8 blogs, one of whom seemed to be surprised when she appeared on my blog tour listing, and I emailed her to go, hey, hey, hey. And she went, who the fuck are you? Yeah, there'd been a mix up. She was not on the blog tour. However, that is probably more than we've had for any of the releases since, where most of the publicity is being, I got an email from an editor around the time of the second book's release where I said, what publicity activities are lined up for me? I'd like to know how to plan the weeks leading up to release. And I got an email back that went, oh, yeah, crap. Are you on good terms with any bloggers?
Always a good email to get.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's the sort of thing that possibly defines the mid-list experience.
Yep.
What? So are you getting like negative royalties in your royalty statements from that second series? Is that rude to ask?
So, well, at the moment, the whole thing is a big minus line. I am actually getting some negative royalties. This is something which I do raise an eyebrow at. So Black Hawks came out in October 2019. I've got a royalty statement, which is for 6-month period ending 31st of the 12th, 2023. So that is comfortably like 4 years after its original release date. And there are still line items on this royalty statement of copies of the Black Hawks, paperbacks, at full price, being handed back 62 units, no, sorry, 39 units on for the period activity, have been handed back. So I was charged my share of that, which is £29.22. They deducted it from my royalties. So somebody somewhere handed back the best part of 40 copies of the book in paperback 4 years after it came out, which, I mean, yeah, fair play to them for hanging on to it for this long in the hope that perhaps it would skyrocket and they'd be able to flog them on eBay. But it does feel a little rude. What is that, like 48 months or something later to just go, nah,
it probably refund, got please. Lost in, yeah, it probably got lost in a stock room somewhere.
Yeah.
They've been using it as a table.
Yeah. Yeah. Lifted up a bit of canvas and went, oh my God, what is that? Jesus, get rid. HarperCollins, get an extraction team in here. We've got an infection. Yeah. So after they finished fumigating the place, somebody went to do the trouble of tallying that up and deducting £29.22 from my royalties as a little fuck you 4 years down the line. So yeah, not only is your book not selling that much, but also people are giving it back and we are unselling. So that's nice. For the new one, because it is jointly accounted, yeah, so three books at 15 grand, and we have sold of the new series a little over, I don't know, 1,500 copies maybe a little more than that. What I love about royalty statements is how easy it is to find things on them.
God, why are they like, I can't. Wait, did you get your newest royalty statement?
Yeah, just this week.
Oh, see, I get the payments. But getting the actual fucking statements is a massive thing. Yeah. I always have to chase them down.
I haven't seen a statement in over a year.
I didn't get any for at least a year after. I mean, no, two years maybe. I'd already earned royalties before I got my first statement. But now they are at least appearing, if only just with a little post-it on them. I've given up on trying to count these things up. It might actually be more like 2,500 copies sold. I don't know. Either way, it's not 5,000, which is, you know, what we all consider to be like the success. Success is the wrong, like, break even point. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I am minus £12,452 in the hole at the moment. On the other hand, I've only had two payments so far. So they should probably pay me for manuscript acceptance. It's the second book now.
Yeah.
Harry.
Yeah, get Harry onto that.
Did I understand correctly that for this second contract and for the Hunters as a series, they did not do arcs and the same things they did for your first?
Yeah, no arcs. So it's been secret very book. Little in the way of, yeah, compared to Black Hawks, it is even less. But yeah, because it came out in hardback, like, the books themselves are beautiful. I don't know if you're like,
there.
I'm going to stretch the cable. So this is just for Scott here. This is the Goldsborough Special Edition. Like, really nice piece of work here.
Yep.
This one's a bit bashed because I carry it around with me like a teddy bear. And I'm so excited about the second and third books, just more for the covers than anything else. But yeah, beautiful artifacts. Everyone should own several, but very few people know they exist. And of course, being a hardcover, the price point is that much higher. So
yeah. Yep.
People are less likely to take a punt on a book they haven't heard much about,
yeah,
that seems to cost more. And also then there's a year between hardback and paperback release. So the paperback for this is coming out in June. So that will be, you know, 11 and a half months or whatever it is. We'll see a few more copies sold. But
you,
it's
you
already
should do.
No, it's already been on ebook sale for 99p. So I feel like if people were going to pick it up, they probably have by now.
No. I mean, if it helps, they did, because I actually got explanations. That's one of the things you get.
Explanations?
I know. Yeah, if you get out there. So when Book Eaters had a hardback release, pretty soon after, it had a 99 sale ebook.
Yeah.
And Vicky was very pleased about that. And she basically said that the reason why they do that is so because they have to apply to them by Amazon. They can't just decide to do it. And Amazon granted it. And what it does is it pushes your book up the rankings in Amazon.
Yeah.
So they're doing it as a form of advertising because they do actually want to push the hardback because it's got a lot better price margins. But then if they can get the ebook on sale, you'll shoot through the rankings, get a lot more eyes on the actual novel. And hopefully that generates print sales.
Yeah, it certainly worked. I mean, I think we had something like 3 reviews on Amazon, 3 ratings on Amazon in advance of that 99p sale. Mm. And now it's up to something like 60 something, which is a massive increase. And I would imagine most of those ratings came from the 99p sale. But I imagine it has shifted some books off the back of it because it's gone from being a book with no ratings at all, or at least one of them, but that's probably from my wife, to, that's clearly not a nothing book.
But interestingly, my book, so I only have one out so far. The second is coming out in November. They recently put my book into the Kindle Unlimited program.
Yeah.
Rather than a down price. And I've had one gold box deal at $2.99 for 24 hours. That did really well. I had my ebook at $2.99 for like a month on a deal. That did nothing. Kindle Unlimited has done nearly nothing.
So how long is the book in pages?
My book?
Yeah. Are you saying you don't know off the top of your head?
You think I read my own fucking book in print? 386.
You see,
you know how many times I read this in digital, dude? Like, yeah. I wrote this. I started this in 2012. Anyway, so...
The reason I asked about the length there is that the anecdotal commentary that I've had is that on Kindle Unlimited, the longer books do better. It's similar with Audible. And this is something that I love to discuss with some of my dear indie colleagues. The notion of that sort of the 15-hour sweet spot, which is whatever that is.
Yeah, I think my book
I can't remember how many pages that is. 600 pages or something?
I think my book hits like right around those targets, right? Like I think it was, I went through so many versions, but I think book one ended up around 150,000 words. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if they do different font size for different tiers of books. I'm on Audible. Where does it even show? Okay, so my audiobook is 16 hours and 11 minutes.
But it's 400 pages, less than 400 pages, and they've stretched that to 16 hours.
I mean, well, so
is someone reading really slowly?
No, the narrator is awesome. I was so impressed with the narrator. And this won't, you probably can't see it at all.
Oh, but okay.
It feels insanely small.
Yeah. That's like when I try and read nonfiction books. I pick up a nonfiction book. It's like, I really want to broaden my horizons. I really want to educate myself about this deeper, meaningful subject. And this book, look, it's only 350 pages. And then you open it and you're like, shit, magnifying glass time.
I was going to see if I had Sunny's
book. 1.5
here.
Pages before bed, if I can do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Do I have Sunny's book sitting with me?
My book is just under 300 pages in print.
Under 300? Okay.
Slender.
Well, I've got Richard Motherfucking Swan's book.
We love that guy.
Do we?
Well, I mean, it says on the card we have to say that every time he's mentioned. Otherwise, we don't get our free pastels.
So holding it up is meaningless. But not only is his hardcover taller by about a half an inch, 0.75 maybe, using my engineer eyes. But his
what do your engineer's eyes tell you?
Yeah. Well, if you have dealt with a measurements as often as I had to in my earlier life, you get a sort of sixth sense about it. But anyway, I don't know that you can see this.
Yeah.
But his text is probably, I mean, it's significantly larger than mine, despite the larger format. I think my book probably has a third more lines on each page than his. So it's like.
So what you're saying is his book is bigger and the words are also bigger.
The
and
words
he's
are
taller than you and just generally.
That's right.
Kind of better,
but,
I think, is the impression I'm getting.
I haven't thought to compare this before, but the spacing is different. The line spacing. Mm-hmm. He's got so much more space.
He's got premium spacing there, Scott.
Look at this. It's different.
That's swan spacing.
I had no idea. I had not thought to even look at that, but they did. They really did just like cram the shit out of those words in there, didn't they?
It makes the books easier to read.
I remember one of the things that my mid-list friends, she just listened to this podcast, fought over and lost, was getting like a scene break graphic between scenes. Because, you know, they'll cut so many corners for books with a lower budget that even things like that can be, right? So like the first book comes out and there's just no, the first book in that trilogy, there's no graphic for the scene break. And so a lot of readers were confused because they just thought that like, there's a line skip and then everything's changed or sometimes the point of view is changed or whatever.
Yeah, I've got a couple of line feeds. That's mine. That's the premium experience. Occasionally there's an asterisk, Times New Roman, 11 point. Oh, what have you got there, Scott?
Oh, just scene break you've ever seen. A barely visible gray smudge.
That's pretty good. Mate, I would kill for a barely visible gray smudge. It's just the mid-listers scrapping in the dirt over scene breaks. It's not even Roman alphabet. Come on, man. I believe you... Scott, you have a second question.
Yeah, what was your second question, Scott?
I don't fucking know anymore.
This is what you get for not asking them both.
I know, right? You actually answered it. I wanted to know what, you know, your experience was between the two books. I guess a follow-up to talking about your books specifically would be, subjectively, in your opinion, do you feel that there is a quality difference between the two? Because there has been a sales difference and a treatment difference, right? Between the two. Do you think there's a quality difference between the two, you know, positive or negative, between your debut and the second series, whether in terms of, you know, your own output and how it turned out, or whether it was, you know, aimed at it appropriately at a good target audience, that kind of thing. I'm just curious your thoughts on, I guess, merit versus just shit that has happened to you that
where did it all go wrong question.
So
I was really lucky, I'd say, in many ways with Black Hawks. I think that the cover did extraordinary things for it. It's a really striking cover. It's a great piece of art, however much I can moan about how there's no way the prince should be holding a spear and, you know, Lemon is far too good looking or whatever the hell. But the cover was spectacular and it just drew an awful lot of people in, and that generated sufficient interest, sufficient sales. Now, as a book, I know it's got issues. Some people will find them more rejectional than others, but I took the choice when I was writing it, I was going to be like, I'm going to subvert as many fantasy tropes as possible. Mm-hmm. So one of them was explaining what was going on. I thought that was facile and trite, so I didn't explain anything that was happening. Just
like
had
our Lord and Savior, Gene Wolfe.
So I just had characters talking to each other. It's like, you better get your shit together. Oh, I don't want to. Well, you better. Oh, okay then. And a lot of people are like, why haven't you explained the political system? Why haven't you explained why they're talking to each other like this? Why haven't you explained anything? And the answer is, tee-hee, because I don't want to. The other trope I decided to subvert was having a satisfying narrative conclusion, which, again, passé, it's been done. So basically finished it almost mid-sentence, lol. However, everything is resolved in the second book. I like to think that I put enough sort of charm and invention in it to make up for the fact that I really didn't know what I was doing. So the biggest difference between then and now is that I know how to write a book. I have a process. I actually work out, you know, story and stakes and even sometimes character motivations sometimes. So the new series are structurally far better. Like, there's a beginning, a middle, and end. There are character dynamics. There is even, God help us, occasionally a theme. Like, there are satisfying conclusions, give or take. Some would say too satisfying. But I think because I am like a tittering fool and I just refuse to make life easy for myself, I don't want to keep doing the same thing. Yeah. So I wrote the first series as a kind of, wouldn't it be funny if instead of writing Western European fantasy, I wrote Eastern European fantasy? And that went over a lot of people's head. Like, the whole thing is set in a sort of an allegory of an analog, sorry, of like Transcaucasia, but flipped to Southern Hemisphere. Again, why? Lol, because it can be. You know, how many fantasy books get written in the Southern Hemisphere? And then for the second book, decided I was going to do Westerns, or second series, sorry. I was going to do Westerns because I didn't just want to keep writing fantasy. I didn't just want to keep doing mercenaries fighting against unfathomable evil, saving the kingdom, all the rest of it. So I wanted to do much smaller scale. I wanted to prioritize female characters because it was quite male dominated in the first series. So I ended up writing, yeah, a fantasy Western about essentially a sort of parent type daughter relationship with deserts and, you know, yeah, sure, there's some mercenaries in there, but explicitly not the same stuff again. And I think it turns out that a lot of my audience like COD Western European fantasy. They like mercenaries. They like stabbing and stakes and saving the kingdom. And although I might have decided I didn't want to write that, they're perfectly happy to keep reading it. The other problem I made for myself is that I wanted to subvert the trope of having, you know, magic or monsters because fantasy is full of that kind of thing. So, yes, none of that. And then when the publisher said, can we have more books set in the same world? I found myself in a prism of my own creation. That's a prism, but also a prison where I'd created a world, a fantasy world where you could do anything except there was no magic and no monsters. So it all had to be realistic's an overstatement, but I like to think of my setting as roughly equivalent to the Fast and the Furious in our world in terms of physics.
One thing I would interject in that is that I mean, you termed them issues, but I didn't hear any issues. I can think of books that succeeded. This earbud keeps falling out of my ear when I push it in. Either Frozen 2 soundtrack starts playing because that's the last thing my daughter was playing.
Sure, Static. Your daughter, yeah.
Yeah, my daughter. Anyway, sorry. I'll start that over so suddenly you can... help me out here. Anyway, you turned them issues. I don't feel like any of those things you said are issues, or at the very least, I can think of books that have succeeded wildly with similar, what I would call, you know, stylistic choices. But it is interesting, and the reason I ask that is that, A, I've asked myself many similar questions and obviously started a podcast about what kinds of things go into success or failure as an author. But it sounds like from your perspective, you feel like your second series is stronger from a structure and craft perspective. And yeah. Yet because... I mean, yeah.
So I'd say that the book that's coming out, so the second book of the new series coming out in this August, it's the one that Sunny has just bravely plowed her way through. That is the best of all of my published work so far. That's the one I can look at and go, yeah, that is my best work. I have written one thing that is better than that, but Harry won't let me submit that to anyone yet because it's not fantasy. I'm coming back to that. I wrote it in 2018. It's been sitting in a corner, and anyone who's ever been trapped at an event with me has heard about this. I won't subject you to it here, but yeah.
I do want to hear about it whenever that might happen, but I'm going to shut up so Senny you can ask.
No, you're fine. I was just going to ask you. No, I was going to ask you both the question I warned you about, which is how do you think your experience publishing has shaped your self-perception, if it has? And you can go as deep or shallow with that as you like. Volunteers for going first.
I kind of want to hear Scott's answer before I know how deep to go.
Okay. yeah, sure. I'll just step right in it. So I'd echo some of the things I heard from you and your story, right, Dave? So my answer is a little bit complex because it's mixed. I simultaneously left my career and then permanently or semi-permanently left my career when I didn't plan to necessarily at the same time as I had my author career that I had very high hopes for just absolutely crater. Right. You know, everything you were talking about with like you email your team asking for a marketing plan and they pretend they don't know what a marketing plan is.
Yeah. Looking at each other being like, it's cute when he emails, isn't it? Bless. Anyway, who's putting out that fire?
Yeah, so I mean, it's a real thing that happens, right? The mental and emotional health aspect of having these hopes, feeling like you've quote unquote made it, or that you've got a shot to make it, right? And then having that not happen, it's kind of like thinking you have a winning lottery ticket, and then you show up to redeem it, and you find out you're dyslexic.
This is how we find out. 36.
Yeah, it absolutely has affected me, but for my part, I think it's not the first time I have encountered a major change to what I thought my life would be, and have had to figure out a completely different life or career path. I've done that a few times in my life already. And so that's kind of where I've turned. It was frustrating, dark, for a while, at least in terms of, you know, how I felt about myself as a writer, and therefore, because that was what I spent the majority of my time doing myself, but it was not insurmountable. And I think at least my answer, and I'd like to hear your plans for the future, Dave, and I'd like to hear this from everybody, but you know, my plans are to go hard at kind of taking a different path to where I hoped to get to in publishing. And then we'll see, because it hasn't fundamentally changed me. And I think the saddest thing I see and hear, and maybe this is a better path that leads to, you know, less stress and less mind-numbing anxiety and depression, or whatever you might call it. But the saddest thing for me is when I see people who obviously have hopes and dreams and want to find success, and then talk themselves into, oh, well, this is okay, and publishing is just a shit show that doesn't pay anybody, and it's okay to be, you know, making poverty wages as an author, and that's just what it is. And that's not my path, and I just, you know, my personality hasn't changed to the point where I'm okay with that. So yeah, I think it was an undeniable hit to the ego, but at the same time hasn't really changed my goals, hasn't really changed my intended path to where I hope to get to. Or rather, it has changed my intended path, but not the
destination's the same, but the route is different.
Yeah. That's correct.
Yeah. Well, I feel like I need to say thank you for sharing after that.
I told Sunny when she said that's what she was going to ask, I was like, well, I hope you're excited to play therapist, because there's years of this shit built up.
So we'll all put the therapist hats on. So I'll try and dignify things then with a sort of a matching response. Ish. So the one thing I would say is that I am obviously much, much older than both of you. I am incredibly old.
You?
I'm 45. I can hear the sharp intakes of breath across the world. 45 and you still act like that? What the fuck, man?
I feel like when you get to this age-ish, because Sonia and I are basically the same age, when you get to this age, it's less effective to count up, and it's really a countdown at that point. So it's like, do you look okay? Do you feel okay? And how long do you have to live? And so
my kids are older.
Yeah, numerical age doesn't matter. Yeah, that much. Anyway,
but there is very much. I mean, again, without wishing to be too morbid, I lost my dad in 2022. My uncle died the start of this year. My wife's aunt died last year. So there is a winnowing going on of the generation ahead of mine. And there's an increasing sense that time is running out in many ways, which I did not have 5 years ago, certainly not 10 years ago. So, you know, A, crashing into middle age without really being mentally prepared is one thing. But then looking around and going like, you know, being the height I am, I'm very poorly constructed. Parts of me have been falling off for quite a while now. I'm looking at, you know, yeah, it's none of the good ones, Scott. Don't worry. But I'm looking at shoulder surgery later this year. I'm probably going to have a steroid injection in my hip next week, maybe, if I'm lucky. You know, they're just sort of mainly sticking things in me to see what will happen. But in terms of sort of active lifespan, this is now a time where I'm looking at series of books or even box sets and going, do I really want to commit to this? Am I really going to read all the Aubrey Maturin books? Do I want to start? Now, the answer is yes, I am. But that's a compulsion and not something to be talked about here. To address the actual question, which is something that's relatively rare for me, I think irrespective of how mid-listy I am, and the answer is very, very mid-listy, but having published a book with a serious publisher that even like your wife's godparents have heard of goes a huge way to answering a whole load of questions that you didn't even know had been asked. Because one of the things about, I think, possibly getting to the very sort of squeaky end of your 30s and realizing that, like, hey, actually, this is it. This is life now. And what are you doing with it? And, you know, I wouldn't want to say drop any of my friends and contemporaries in it, but I know plenty of people who I'd look at their life's style of, like, they get to watch the TV shows, they get to play the video games, and I'm looking at them going, oh, man, why do I spend my weekday evenings sitting in front of a keyboard or occasionally standing instead of actually watching the things I'm interested in? I've got so many books to read. I've got so many TV shows I'm never going to get to. I've got all these video games that I want to sink like 600 hours into and then another 600 hours. Why do I do this to myself? But then there is that question about what are you doing though? Like, really, what are you doing with your life and how are you going to leave the world different? And I know that that is a ridiculous thing to say for someone who writes essentially disposable swear fantasy, but
that what a great notion, genre.
The notion of creating something out of the ether that did not exist and would not have existed had you not sat down and actually put the work into it. Another friend of mine said years ago, like, why books? Why not a screenplay? Like, they're a lot shorter for a start. But I've always fallen back on that. Like, a screenplay is just, it's the opening line in a conversation, isn't it? Like, the gulf between I've written a screenplay or even a first draft of one and seeing a film is so vast. And should a thing ever be made, the chance of actually bearing much resemblance to the thing you originally had in mind is, you know, reasonably slim. But you can sit down, you can write a book. It doesn't even need to be published, but you can write a book by yourself, and you probably should. But then getting that, getting an agent, getting published, like, these are things that even though the sort of the great like roller coaster high didn't come off, those achievements are still there. And every time I have a moment of sort of, you know, middle-age crisis uncertainty of what am I doing in my life, da-da-da-da-da. I mean, realistically, this series, like, even though the book that's coming out in August, it will be the best thing I've ever published. Everyone should buy it. You don't even need to have read the first book in the series. Seriously, you can just go with the second one. It is, and I'm going to use another technical term, it's fucking brilliant. I'm tempted to name it here because it's quite hard to find a book that has no name, but I will hold off for the official announcement, which has to be coming like literally any week or month now. That book is amazing. However, it's probably not going to be a bestseller. Realistically, being the second book in a trilogy where very few people have read the first, it is unlikely to leave me with a stellar sales record. It is unlikely to mean that I will be able to approach a publisher with subsequent works and say, hey, it's me, that guy who sells books. It'll be more like, hey, it's me, that guy who went on publishing Rodeo and set fire to everything. Oh, yeah, I love that guy. No, we're not taking anything from it. So this could be like this book and then the one that follows next year, assuming it does get out next year. These could be the last things I ever publish traditionally, but I'm never going to stop writing. Even though my kids are growing up in the background and I am increasingly annoying them. No, I'm avoiding them because they're annoying. I mean, sure. Yeah. They're avoiding me because I'm annoying, but hell, look who their dad is. What chance do they have? So I will keep writing. I'll keep getting this wild, crazy nonsense out of my head and putting it down and making things. And even if I end up going completely indie or hybrid or whatever else, it'll still be ticking along. And it will have answered that question of, you know, what have you done with your life, etc. It's like, oh yeah, I got married, had some kids, pursued the middle class existence of the straight white British male, absolutely down the middle, like no deviation, no hesitation, path of least resistance, no complaints whatsoever. But I wrote some books, and some people read the books, and a few of them even liked them. And that's the part that keeps me going. The writing part, I could do without that. But the rest of it, sure. Having written.
Has that always been your outlook and your goal? Or has your publishing experience affected that?
I think it would have been nice if Black Hawks had been good enough to catapult me into being a full-time writer. And this will make you laugh. I was 2018, I signed the first book contract. Well, no, probably signed it in 2019. 2018 was when the offer was made. And I thought, right, first book, 2019. I could put out a book every year for 5 years. So they all do okay. I could be a full-time writer by 2023. 2024, it turns out. I can't do maths. But, lol. Not even close. So my all-time gross earnings before agent's commission since 2018, £32,000. After expenses, tax, agent's commission, and everything else, I have made a sum total of £24,500 since 2019, which, even if I curbed my dairy milk habit, would not be enough to live on. I eat a shitload of chocolate, seriously.
I hope that, you know, you find the success that your books and your writing deserve. But
well, thank you very much.
Do you want to tell us the pettiest hill that you're willing to die on?
I've been puzzling about this ever since I started to consider it as a possibility. And the problem is that all of my hills are massive. They're all far too important. Or they're all just a little bit too familiar. Like, for example, we should stop calling AI in its current generation AI, because it's not intelligence. It is just statistical agglomeration. I think the best description I've heard of it is a collage machine. So I know that I'm preaching to converted on this one, but I would cheerfully like to invent a device that delivers a giant boxing glove from space to every single marketing twerp who sends out an email newsletter or a press release with some kind of "now with AI" in it from the guy who was like, "Hey, what if your fridge had AI?" And and the answer was, "What? And like, it could tell you when you're about to run out of milk." And I know that generally, you know, like in cartoons, boxing gloves are sort of like pow, ha, it's all soft. But this one will have the density of uranium-232 and will splatter them across a sort of 2.5 mile square radius. I don't know if that counts.
I will accept it.
That counts, yep.
So that's it. Yes, anyone who says they're trying to put AI in anything in this current generation, when what they mean is a large language model or something like a fucking chat bot, no, you can't have it. You get crushed.
I'm very conscious of time, but if you want to plug yourself quickly before we head off, David, and then we'll let you return to your disastrous day.
Thank you very much. Yes, so you can find me at daverag.com. That has links to all of my active social media, which these days is primarily Blue Sky. I do maintain a Twitter presence, even though every time I check on there to see what the notifications are, I feel like I'm complicit in some kind of crime. And I feel the irrepressible urge to wash my hands. I'm also a Mastodon, God bless it. It'll just carry on forever. You can find my books in most good bookshops. You might have to ask at the counter and order them in. But they're all the Hunters available. Hardback, paperback is published in probably June, probably July. It's coming up soon. And the second secret book is available late August. It is brilliant. You don't need to read The Hunters to read it. I would say you can find it on listings now. It is on Amazon and other things. So it doesn't have a title, it doesn't have a cover, but go and order it, please. Order my books. They've got no cover, no blur. They've got nothing. just order them anyway. They're great, honest.
You've been listening to the Publishing Radio Podcast with Sunny Dean and Scott Drakeford. Tune in next time for more in-depth discussion on everything publishing industry. See you later.